boldly going where millions of fans have gone before. Green Shirt, a newbie's trek through the next generation. With your hosts, Cameron, the new recruit, Marcy, the passionate veteran, and Alex. This week's episode, where no one has gone before. Engage.
You know, it's a simple thing of, like, if you have the lights inside your house on, and it's dark at night, and
people
you don't
have
the
curtain,
people can see. I'm not a peeping Tom. I'm not a weirdo, all right? I just
You are
can't.
Inviting gazes if you
yeah, exactly.
have your lights
like,
on
if you have a giant bay window, and you have the lights inside without a curtain. So anyway, there's this guy I see almost every night, and he is a morbidly obese man who likes to walk around naked, which good for him. You
sure.
know, let him have his thing. And he has a giant eagle tattoo on his chest, which is great. But this particular night, he caught me looking, and I was like, made this immediate look of like, well, the jig is up, and like, I just kind of started walking quicker, and then the guy came out of his house
what?
And actually started
naked?
Yelling at me, yeah, still naked, started yelling at me, he was like, you like it? You like it? And because I have learned from experience, do not engage these people, I just started to run.
Well, that's what you're doing anyway, right?
Well, I was, at this point, I was like in between like yeah. laps or whatever. Yeah, so I just started to run again. I was like, well, I can't go by this street anymore. Good for me.
Well, hello and welcome to yet another episode of Green Shirt. I'm Cameron Harrison, whose virgin eyes you are re-experiencing the next generation through. But mine are not the only sets of peepers in this room, no. Laughing over here is the quintessential Marcy Phillips.
Hello.
And the inscrutable Alex Grantham.
Hello. Right.
Well, this week we watched Where No One Has Gone Before. And I guess this is as good a time as any to acknowledge that even though we've said the writers are kind of crap at writing their female characters, someone high up, maybe Roddenberry, made the decision to make the opening monologue gender neutral. So that was good.
Did they?
It used to be yeah. No man has gone before.
Oh.
And Picard says no one.
The things I choose not to pay attention to.
But let me mention, because I've been listening to some of our podcasts now, and we've talked a lot about the female characters. And I agree that Tasha has been thrown under the bus by the writers. And Marcy has made some very good points about how Troy could be used better. But we've also talked about how she's been used well and is an interesting character and a good piece to this ensemble. But I gotta say, like, I like Crusher a lot. I like Dr. Crusher quite a bit. I think she's well written. I'm crushing on Crushers. Do we have a problem with her? Like, I think she's a good female character.
I think they give her the best chance to, like, have a, like, a genuine, this is gonna sound awful, have like a genuine job.
Yeah.
On the ship. I mean, I think security is great. We all need security. But I mean, like, you could easily just replace her with something else, you know. I think Troy, I think an argument can be made this episode, both pro and con for Troy. Mm-hmm. But a ship's counselor, it still hasn't been given, like, a compelling reason why she needs to be on the bridge.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, because most of the things she says, let's be fair, are things that you could perceive with your eyes.
Yeah, this episode in particular, yeah.
I don't know, what do you think, Marcy?
Well, I agree that I like Crusher. She was one of my favorite, she was my favorite female character, I think. I do feel like they kind of do the same thing with her, though, where, oh, let's call the doctor in. Doctor, I'm doing my doctoring thing. Yep, he's sick, you know. I mean,
you got that,
she just repeats
again,
kind of what
you.
The tricorder tells sure. her, you know.
And she's a single mom, you know.
But I think Gates McFadden does a really great job of sort of portraying her as having charisma, and like she has a tete-a-tete with the captain, and they seem like equals.
Well, I like their relationship a lot, because she obviously is super horny for him, and like the only bad writing might be like their relationship, but it goes both ways, that it's yeah. not very subtle, their tension. But I love that even though she obviously has the hots for him, she still stands up to him all the time.
That's true.
I think
yeah.
that's a nice.
And you are right that like plenty of the men have terrible lines too. I guess it just goes to show that like Picard or Patrick Stewart is an amazing actor, because some of those lines are such hot garbage, and he makes them sound
makes them.
Fine.
Yeah.
Well, or at least like not
passable.
Cringeworthy.
What I was thinking in this episode, there are a couple of actors that make what could have been really terrible roles actually, you know, good.
Sure. Yeah. Memorable.
Yeah. And so the actors are what make it. And I think Gates McFadden, she's playful and she's smart and she, you know, gets Picard to kind of come out of his shell. And I feel like Deanna hasn't really been given a chance to sort of have any other role other than this is what this person is feeling.
Obviously, something is going to... Yeah, they haven't really brought up her and Riker's past relationship
yet.
No,
not really.
No, they're just like, a lot of weird moments where like Riker says, like, I need to see Troy, and I need to see her now, and she needs to be the one with me on my crew.
Been taking a lot of counseling sessions lately.
Look, I have issues that I haven't talked about. You know, that's why I grew the beard.
Still doesn't have it in this episode, Alex.
No. Sure. I'm sure he has it in this episode. I watched it.
And then before we jump into the episode, I'll do a quick reverse thruster, just real quick to pat myself on the back a bit.
Okay.
It was a couple episodes ago, Code of Honor, I made a joke about how it sounded like a Steven Seagal movie.
Oh, yeah.
I was Googling it to get some images for the podcast site, and sure enough, Code of Honor is a Steven Seagal movie.
Is it really?
There really is one.
It just I don't know why I'm surprised. It sounds exactly like every Steven Seagal movie.
Mark for death.
Under Code of Siege Honor.
Only Steven Seagal had made a cameo in the next
Generation. Oh my god, yeah. Back when he was in his prime, whatever you want to call whatever that thing was that he was. Just constantly slick ponytail.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Before his entire face, like, single-handedly took up a movie poster.
Where no man has gone before. This episode, I can say I recognized the director this time around for once.
Oh, yeah?
Rob Bowman, who went on to quite some success with The X-Files, one of the big directors there, directed the first movie, which was really good, and then some shitty movies like Elektra and Reign of Fire.
Yeah, I was curious about that because I had heard that he directed several Next Generation episodes, but I didn't look at his other credits.
He did, yeah.
That's kind of cool, yeah. Well,
this
he did
his first
fine.
One, I think.
We come across the Enterprise docked near the USS Fearless. They're going to get some maintenance done to their warp drive to enhance their warp drive. And we come into the middle of a pretty tense tete-a-tete between Picard and Riker.
Tense.
Like, I understand them wanting to, like, just start the episode off with some drama and, like, introducing the real conflict. But what, like, did Picard wake up on the wrong side of the bed? What is going on?
It almost makes me feel that scenes were cut. Because well, the level of, like, anger from Picard at Riker just voicing a completely legitimate concern. He's like, I did the job.
What are you talking about?
I did the job I was tasked to do. And not
you're going to have to do it even more now.
Yeah.
And now you're going to, like, dress me down just in the middle of the bridge in front of everybody?
Yeah.
Picard, what is happening? I felt the same way. Like, either there's missing scenes or, like, those actors got together and were like, what is going on with this? We need to add some spice to this scene.
Yeah, something is missing because it doesn't make any logical sense outside of the idea that, like, Riker has committed some sort of horrible Starfleet infraction
right,
that only the true nerds are supposed to know in terms of, like, breaking rank and whatnot.
Well, maybe it's just that Picard has so much trust in Starfleet.
I was wondering maybe it's that, yeah.
That, like, okay, two ships have already gotten this enhancement, and it's gone fine, Riker. Why are you distrustful?
Higher-ups told me we're doing this. Don't tell me otherwise, number one.
There are so many character beats from Picard in these first five episodes that I don't match up with my memory of Picard. Mm-hmm. I remember him being warm and, like, always, like, reasonable the situations, but, like, so far he's been, like, a relentless francophile, hater of children, and now he just, like, randomly yells at his, like, a crew that he, like, last episode made good with. I don't understand.
Well, and there's a couple of scenes, I think, in this episode where you kind of can see Patrick Stewart coming out, his, like, warmth coming free of this role that they've kind of, like, shoved him into, but I do feel like he is one moment one thing and one moment the next.
They're definitely trying to find his character for sure.
Yeah.
But we should mention that the conflict is that this specialist is coming on board is supposed to make the engines run more efficiently.
Right.
And the track record for the specialist going on other ships is flawless. Yeah. But when they actually go through the, like, schematics of it, it's just like, well,
makes
this
no sense.
This
is gibberish.
Like, it makes no difference to the ship's efficiency. Like, he would neither hurt it or help it. Just is like, who is this guy? Is there a weird thing with breaking rank with Starfleet? Because it makes it seem as though, like, higher ups can't be contacted in order to, like, check this guy out. You can't ask legitimate questions. If Starfleet has approved something, then it's just the
I think they're portraying it as what the public maybe thinks military is, which is if you're the low man
take your orders.
Okay. Kaczynski, who you see not very much longer after this, is a total dick, and it isn't unreasonable for Riker to ask him to do the things that he's asking him, and that's what's so weird about the whole situation. And Riker's got his number, like, right off the bat. Yeah. But I think...
To be fair, Picard does say, like, look, you're worried about this, Riker. You take the helm on this.
Take care of it.
You want to do it, you do it. Yeah.
And
maybe we're supposed to assume because, as we later learn, that this works in a way, then he's, like, become a super... Kaczynski's become a superstar.
Right.
And therefore, he can't be questioned. Yeah. And Starfleet's just been like, I mean, you do you, man.
I was wondering how he got Starfleet on board with this. Like, surely someone in Starfleet was like, this doesn't make any sense. I want to understand what is happening before we just start.
And who is this strange man with you?
But I'm getting ahead of myself. Ahead of herself, but
yes, we will get to that.
And where did he come from? No. I had it with me the whole time.
Many questions.
That's right, because he's not Starfleet, like, certified.
Oh, anyway.
Well, there's lots of civilians that work with Starfleet.
I mean, okay, all right. But they don't normally become, like,
the script is the equivalent of Kaczynski's code. Total gibberish.
So sometimes, and this is, I'll try to make this as least of an in-joke as possible, but sometimes jokes come to you with wings. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to do any work to make the joke. This is a Polish man whose name is Kaczynski, and I couldn't help but think, for people who don't know, the three of us went to a school, went to college with a man named Kaczynski, who had, he was a hard man to respect, and I'm sure Poland, that you have not earned the reputation of being just a country of inbred pig farmers, but you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, okay? These people are just not correct. They're backward.
I think you have like a pool of two.
That's all I need, the next generation. These people
and
were ambassadors.
Kaczynski, okay.
not the country of origin.
You hear Kaczynski, you know exactly whose face you think of. This man has destroyed his people for
That's
everybody.
That's called anecdotal evidence.
All right, fine. But as we listen to this, I think this episode will prove that our suspicions and anecdotal evidence about Mr. Kaczynski were accurate.
Speaking of the man, Riker does go down to the teleportation room, and Kaczynski comes on board, followed by a strange alien who is just introduced as his assistant.
Just wandering around the engine room.
Immediately, and this is a great opportunity to reintroduce everyone's favorite engineer, Madam McDougal. McDougal?
McDougal.
Oh, right. But instead it's just a
Scotty, like, ripoff.
Flob.
Mr. Argyle.
Scotty ripoff. I was totally like, okay, that McDougal didn't work. Let's try a Scotty.
Well, I almost thought when I first saw it, I was just like, oh, this is just a stranger who's walked into the room, and they don't know he's behind them. And they don't look to even, like, notice him. But then when they said his name, which his name, by the way, is Lieutenant Argyle, I was like, of course it fucking is. Your name is the blandest nothing. Your name is a pattern that belongs on socks you give at Christmas. That's who you are. But then I thought it was hilarious that I was like, well, this guy is just like, well, I'm Lieutenant, like, see me once and never see me again. He's like, apparently he's like the longest running, like, supporting.
He has a lot to do in this episode.
Like,
relatively.
Chief engineer. Poor McDougal.
Well, so immediately we learn that Kaczynski's an asshole, and he shoves past Riker on his way to the engine room to input his code. And we get down there, and we meet one of our beloved characters from the pilot, that elevator. They finally made an appearance again.
Oh, that elevator.
I didn't really notice it that much. Was it as janky as
it was the first time?
No,
we just see someone right in the background. Okay. Out of focus. They did not focus on it again, but it's there. It's there for sure.
I'm like, well, we're going to make this as much as much a subtle feature as possible.
And then we come down and see Wesley, who is wearing like a pumpkin spice hued sweater poncho.
Rocking that sweater. What? I saw that. Now, this is the best thing about you, Wesley.
All I can imagine is that he has, like, utilized the parts from the replicator in his closet for his science projects, and the thing is just going haywire and spitting out whatever random 80s sweater bullshit he's wearing every episode.
I would love to know, like, what the costume designers' their thought process is. Like, well, you know, we saw the Wesley character and we're like, we got the sweater for you. We know what's going to look right on you, for sure.
There's a scene that I started getting my little fan geek heartstrings going when that assistant is spending a little time with Wesley. I'm not going to say anymore.
Oh, is this spoiler territory?
Yeah, it is.
Things happen later.
There's
on
a lot of it this? Oh, in okay. this episode. I'll so to... I'll point out some moments, but okay. I might have you decide, like.
Yeah. I might have to go la 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 during part of this.
What do you think is going to come back?
Yeah, well, I'm curious. I have some thoughts about that.
Finally, we have a Star Trek episode that men of Nambla can enjoy. Because. I saw people of Nambla, child rapists need entertainment too, Marcy.
That is so terrible.
Because what are they going to do while they're whittling their dildos? No, I saw this interaction between Wesley and I was like, yes, of course.
Why it's do you perfectly have to chip in everything? I was like, I love this moment.
Heartstrings were pulled, Alex, and here, you cut
them
in
half.
There's
some intense like Stop. Eye contact yeah, between the two of them.
Look, listen for a minute.
All right.
Because they operate on a level no other human
this
can
actor,
operate on.
This actor, they kind of portray him like he could be creepy. But in reality, I felt a lot of just calm energy coming off this guy who was playing this character. Mm-hmm. And even though everybody was like, who is this alien? I was
actually,
like...
no one was like that. That's the problem.
Well, I agree, Mark. I think the actor is amazing. That's why I was like so sold when he said, you know, Wesley, from where I'm from... There's no taboo against enjoying the pleasures of a child.
Yes, and you're a terrible.
On time, so
you're
ages
a terrible.
He sold. He sold the line. Is that good?
No, it's so bad.
But
it's
I did.
Such not a funny joke.
I like the idea too that you cross the line. Yeah. I like too that because you know for the longest time we have no idea what this guy's name is and they make a point of saying like his name is unpronounceable and I just imagine Kaczynski being like I have it written down here, it's like it's his name is Tim, it's like not hard at all. Who is this guy? Yeah,
what is this letter?
There's a lot of body acting happening in this episode. Like you can see Argyle in the background with his hands on his hips, like. Just thrusting his elbows all over the place. And then when Kaczynski's like walking around, he's throwing those arms left and right.
It's less of a stage play for sure. It's like kinetic action actually happening in the scene. Well, and it's weird too, this assistant, because like when I first saw him, I was like, what is the guy on his head? Like, I thought he had like some sort of like bone ornament or something like that, but it's just his hair. It is very
he's got,
bizarre.
Like, a forehead application, right?
He does.
Well, he had the forehead, but the actual like hair in the back of his head. Yeah, it's like, but it's like very. It's he has a permanent. He has a very like intricate hairstyle that I thought was hilarious.
Did you see his hands in the beginning? Because like,
yeah,
I see his hands
fingers.
At the end. Yeah,
they're like claws.
But I was like, where did those come from? Has he had that the entire time?
Yeah, he's got lobster boy hands. Yeah. Which I guess apparently that actor. Absolutely despised having the appliances on, so he like tried to hide it from camera. You didn't hide it from us. We saw those disgusting fused fingers that you have.
No one was gonna hire him again. You were the one who wore those lobster hands, weren't you? So here we also got to see the delightful warp engine diagram that was very like 90s hacking visuals.
Very
like,
much so.
How do we portray this? Well, we'll just have some like fruit by the foot things peeling off the Enterprise to show warp.
Yeah, the things that impressed us as children, because you know what it is. It's just a pre-rendered video that they're pretending to touch.
Yeah.
It's just a video behind a screen. But I have to say, like a lot like the hologram from last time, I was like, all right, it's pretty good. Because, and I don't know how much of this has changed with, like, the Redux. Like, no one's told me, like, how many of the visual effects have been redone. But I was like, if this was the visual effects that they had in 87, nice. Not bad, yeah.
I don't know.
And then there's a moment where Kaczynski comes through and does a little something he shouldn't have.
A little shoulder
oh
check.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Riker Reflections.
Whoa, 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 Kaczynski. Did you just push my number one? I don't know if you noticed, but Riker saw through your ruse before you even walked on board. Step off before I warp 10 your ass back to the Fearless. Don't worry, Riker. I'll have that gleam back in your eye in no time.
Riker.
Did you know, I haven't actually, I'm surprised I haven't mentioned this yet. Do you know where Commander Riker was born?
Nope.
He was born in Valdez.
Valdez, Alaska, my hometown.
Is that
true? Absolutely true. It was on like the back of his action figure.
See, I can't believe that you didn't know that.
This actually turns out to be like, if we find a copy of Cam's diary later on, he knew it the whole time. It's the whole reason for this podcast.
I did know it. I've known it for years.
Oh, you just found it out.
Yeah, I can't believe I haven't mentioned it yet on the podcast, because I've been trying to get them to put up a statue in Valdez. I haven't been trying, but I've been saying for years they should.
Of course, what they don't tell you is that in Riker's time, after the apocalypse has happened, all it is just beached whales. just dripping oil.
His father had to step his mother in there like Han to Luke in a Tauntaun.
Pass. This is where the beard comes in. He has to hide a lot of things about himself. He does that like figuratively.
Oil is big in his background.
I thought it was interesting too, like, you know, we've spent a little time teasing Troy, but she says that she can't pick up anything from this assistant, which is weird because she did say last episode, I can't pick up anything from these Ferengi.
Yeah,
she's like, it's really unusual.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, like, why it wasn't a bigger moment when she failed, where it was like, we're lost! We have no idea how we're going to handle with this weird alien!
Well, yeah, Riker's been given, like, two pretty big clues from, like, Troy and later from Wesley, and he's just like, shut up!
But yeah, I imagine, like, a future episode actually goes to her Betazoid homeworld. And it just turns out to be, like, the most pathetic charlatans. But it turns out they have no real powers.
Well,
they just scam their way into Starfleet.
When you started talking about it, I was like, wait a second. They could be, like, the psychics of Star Trek. Like, oh, yeah, of course they can feel your emotions and hear your thoughts. But nobody's ever really tested it, scientifically. And so she's like, yes, I can't feel anything from him.
She's secretly running the entire ship.
For the radio listeners, it's psychics with quote-unquote. So anyways, Kaczynski puts in his code and they start warping and something happens. They're going super fast
off
the charts. We're seeing galaxies fly by, even though apparently they only go three galaxies over. We see galaxies fly by.
So Cam, you're a Star Wars guy.
Uh-huh, I like Star Wars.
Yeah, and here's something that
Yeah, I do like Star Wars. But
maybe this is one of those things where it's like, if you just hang on for two more episodes, you'll find out. But like, there's a big contradiction in the world of space travel between Star Wars and Star Trek, in that like, they specifically say in Star Wars that they have to plot the course intricately, because if there's any debris that the velocity they're going, it will tear the ship apart. When this thing starts warping, it's taking turns. It's going straight through galaxies. It's not like missing the outside perimeter of the galaxy.
Well,
is that what it is? Why does the ship not rip apart?
Well, I was going to bring this up because 99.6% of space is void and it's nothing, right?
Well, here's
land in a galaxy, not the voids between galaxies.
Yeah.
Close enough to see whatever the fuck they can see outside. It looks like a spiral.
A Saturn
galaxy, though.
It's pretty cool. I mean,
they're actually pretty cool effects.
But it makes no sense. What
it
are they?
It doesn't make sense, but I was like, ooh.
Yeah, I was like, for an audience member, it's like, nice guys. But they. it doesn't make any logical sense. But I think, like, and this is, it's been a long time since I've been a tour guide at NASA, but I think there's, like, a lot of actually, like, microscopic dust in the void. You're right, it's mostly void, right? It's mostly empty space.
But there are bits of
if you were going thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of miles, you're going to, in a straight line, you're going to hit.
Around it burns up. The
well, are they
dust?
Like? I wish we had somebody here who just loved this stuff so much, because are they actually jumping and we're just seeing like
Isn't it
a visualization?
Like an FTL
they
drive
say plotting kind of? The course.
Well, FTL actually is a jump,
right?
But
right.
Like we're seeing them move. So what is that about? You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
it
you
takes some
see
time to get places, so they're like traveling through something, whether it's a wormhole or hyperdrive and warp drive are just really bending the rules
so
of science.
We could probably extrapolate some things later on in the episode when we talk about how it actually actually happened.
Yeah, for this actual space shuttle from this episode, you can excuse it out, but I mean in general.
In general, I feel like they're going fast enough.
You think it's a jump?
They know what the bodies in our space because they have sensors and they also have like a shield around the ship that can destroy anything that's big enough to actually destroy.
Well, last episode, I presume that they're chasing the Ferengi in warp because they don't know where they're going, but they say something
that's
like
kinda weird,
they're veering into a solar system. I'm pretty sure they say. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're right. They turn and they can steer. They're not pre-plotted destinations always.
And not to get like too hung up on it, but like when you're moving that quickly, the smallest amount of material all of a sudden has the impact of a much larger mass. So I'm just saying, like, the force field can't take like torpedo blast, but it could take like what would essentially be heating.
It can take multiple torpedo blasts.
Yeah, but it's something much more powerful than a torpedo.
How powerful is a torpedo?
Hey, maybe maybe there's like point defense lasers that are like shooting like asteroids out of the face.
I will hold judgment on this one. I'm going to let the show explain itself to me.
But still, I was astounded by that they just randomly stopped when they get worried about how fast they're going, and they wind up in a galaxy.
Yeah.
Chances are they'd be millions of miles away from anything, but they are in a galaxy.
Or a star system, basically.
Right. I mean, close enough to see stuff. Right. The Triangulum Galaxy? Yeah, I guess it's a real galaxy.
The far side of Triangulum and M33, which I guess is their own nomenclature. Like, is that actually like official nomenclature for a real galaxy?
I was actually looking it up today, and I guess they are both a name for that one specific galaxy. That's a real place.
Good for them.
my reaction to it. Oh, good for you guys. A little bit of actual science.
I liked though that I did see this little bit of like trivia in terms of like the things that got changed later on when the episode was re-released. When they go this incredible velocity, the original line from Geordi was, "We've gone beyond warp 5," and I guess somebody was like, "Yeah, that's halfway." Like, so is this faster?
Warp 9 in the pilot.
So they changed it to like, "We've gone beyond warp 10," which let us know that warps should matter, and they should be considered in terms of your plot line.
Right.
It's not like star dates, so just chuck them in there.
Right.
Well, they say something, the warp barrier, they talk about the warp barrier, which sounds like some sort of Trek thing that they've invented. And
you can all of a sudden like see the face of God.
Which I guess is 10, as 10 the warp barrier.
I think for this ship, right?
Once you get past like 10, your ship could blow apart, basically.
Okay, yeah.
And so like there's certain episodes where he's like, "We're like 10.1.
Taking it to 11.
Like, consoles start exploding.
Fucking
consoles. I can't wait until that shit starts happening.
Speaking of how fast, there was some numbers thrown around so we could figure out how fast Warp 10 actually is. Did anyone do the math?
Nope.
I did.
Okay.
I think, I don't know, I'm sure I did it wrong, but we do learn that it will take 300 years to travel 2,700,000 light years.
Okay.
So if I divide that into 200, 700, blah, 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 you get 9,000 light years is how fast
that's warp 10 is. Very fast.
Yeah, this episode is basically Voyager.
Yeah, it really it's a backdoor pilot for Voyager.
Yeah, exactly.
We talked last episode about, you know, how we like the sense of wonder in Star Trek, and this definitely approaches there. I mean, they're literally going where no one has gone before.
This felt more
and
like...
And then it's just wasted potential, I feel.
Yeah, this felt more like your version of the jellyfish, Marcy. Like, when I watched this, I was like, I think I can understand where Marcy's getting her jellyfish, like, hard on. Because there are moments in this episode where I was like, I like seeing them go through galaxies.
Yeah, I
wish
they
had done more when they got there.
Yeah.
I was with Data, like, let's do some scientific research, motherfucker.
We should mention real quickly, though, that they've gone this speed and they are lost. They are so far away from their home galaxy.
They know where they are.
Oh, sorry, I should say that they're
marooned.
They're marooned. There we go. Thank you.
Word.
Much better.
Well, and I feel like this is the first real solid episode. I wouldn't say like their best episode, but it's definitely not as terrible as the
I think
last...
it's a step up.
Yeah, it's a step up.
I'd equate it with the last one. I feel like there's some good stuff, some bad stuff, and a lot of wasted potential.
Why do you think that, Cam? Why do you think that this is the same as the other?
They both have some big revelations. We see the Ferengi last time. We learned stuff about Wesley this time. There's both some good stuff, like I like what we learn about Wesley, it's introducing some good character arc stuff. There's some bad stuff, like what the heck is going on with Kaczynski and his assistant, like that's just not explained at all. And then there's a lot of wasted potential, like in the last episode there's good stuff with the Ferengi and them and who's got who trapped and they kind of just let that fizzle. And here we're like, we're in another galaxy, are we going to do anything about that? No. we're going to go to the end of the universe and people will start manifesting thoughts randomly.
Well, for better or worse, this feels like the criticism of the old episodes, which was that they were mainly thought experiments. And like, I was as you were with the Ferengi one with this one, mm-hmm. because even though the characters have no agency, everyone's just bumbling around, like just trying to figure out how to like get out of this place. Like no one's really doing anything. I was still like, oh, well, you know, if you just kind of take it as like a fun idea that doesn't make a lot of sense, which we'll get into, but like it's okay. It's fun. And that the character of the assistant, I think, saves the show. He's like really compelling.
Yeah. Well, let me add that. Like I like that a lot. I think that's what separates it from the original, is that there is like introducing an overarching plot and arc for these characters and the ship through Wesley and his fate or whatever. Well, I guess one thing is like last episode at least had a lot of funny moments and a lot of fun to be had. There's actually not a lot of fun to be had in this episode. Like, or there's not a lot of funny moments.
Other than
moments.
Just you have a Polish man like destroying the warp drive.
Other than the obvious, of yeah. course. But which is interesting because like they're never in an immediate danger here. Unlike previous episodes where like danger is falling down on their heads. They take time to like laugh at Data and have finger cuffs and everything. Here they have all the time in the world. They're just kind of marooned for a while. And it's super serious this episode. It was just an interesting thing I noticed.
But Marcy, you thought this was a step up in what way?
I like the slower pace of it. I think you don't always need to have like immediate danger. Like we're testing out some warp drives. Something bad happens. You get to a distant galaxy. I agree that, wow, Picard, you're really quick to just shut down everybody that says, let's do a little bit of studying, because what's the difference going to make between, like, leaving now, leaving in an hour when you could do... I mean, your sensors are pretty top-notch. Yeah. You're a fucking explorer. That's your job.
Or even, like, yeah, a couple days and let them, like, really work out what happened. Right. Not just like, well, let's just do the opposite.
And even, like, the traveler who is obviously the second... part of a two-part team that's required to get you home is obviously not doing very well. And you're like, fuck it. Like, I don't care. Get that guy to get going and
move
on.
Well, again, Marcy, this is another proof of what a good actor he is, because you're right. He gets sick, but, you know, he does tell Wesley at a certain point. He's like, oh, no, you know, Wesley, when a man warps,
he does not
gets very tired. And if you just give me an extra 20 minutes, I'm sure I can get back up to warp speed. You don't worry about
Alex.
This. So they're marooned.
Alex.
And then weird things start happening.
No more Nambla jokes.
Weird
you're
things
start
your quota.
You're done.
Can I get one more at the end?
No.
So weird things start happening on the ship. I'm going to see if I can sneak it in.
I did learn the answer to my question from the first episode is how much of the our known galaxy have they explored?
11%.
11%? That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. I was like,
not a lot.
Finally,
not
we
surprised.
Know. Finally,
yeah.
we know. That was a question.
Yeah, I thought that I didn't realize they were completely stuck in the one galaxy still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
apparently,
only a tenth of it
doesn't give you very
So. As we said, you know, they don't study this new galaxy. They jump right back into warp, and something even weirder happens. I don't really explain it, but when they stopped, they're in what I thought was a much more boring-looking place.
No, and, I like the new place even better.
A bunch of geometric blue, like, screensaver.
Blue balls.
Ooh, the blue balls.
I was waiting for that one. as they were getting to this second location, I was reminded of Rainbow Road from Mario.
Oh, yeah. It does look like, what is it, the Beetlefrost or whatever
they
say?
Yeah.
F that road. It's so hard.
It was so hard, but like, I was like, oh, I'm on the Rainbow Road to like the end of the galaxy.
I was thinking four. But you're talking about Mario Kart.
Mario Kart.
Oh, yeah, they're both not the Rainbow the same Bridge. Place. That's a bridge, Alex.
Oh, fine. It's kind of a road.
Rainbow Bridge is very hard, too.
They're just the same, all right?
So are they, where are they? Because, like, they kind of
this
say
is
a
all
few
fudge.
Different things.
This is all
are they
fudge.
At the edge of the galaxy? Are they beyond the edge
yeah,
of the galaxy? Are they in another dimension?
I might be misremembering. Please, someone else better tell me. But, like, at one point someone says it's the end of the universe or edge of the universe. Yeah. And someone says there is no end of the universe.
Well, then, like,
so
the
then they're saying we're in a kind
like,
of a mystical place.
You're in a land of thought or something. He kind
yeah.
of implies some weird.
It made it seem to me like they had
stuff.
Jumped dimensions.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, because I mean...
But then they say, they give a specific number, we are billions of miles from our galaxy.
Fair, that's fair, yeah.
I mean, they do kind of hint earlier, the assistant who basically says, oh, no, you're too young for this. And he says something like, space, time, and thought aren't as separate as they appear.
Don't let on that you know that.
And so you kind of get an inkling that that's where you're at.
You're right, Alex. He has like some weird like secret thing he's going on with Wesley there. I'm sorry. Karen,
do not encourage this behavior!
Rewatch the episode. I think you guys will see it through my eyes.
Don't tell any other adults we talked about this, Wesley.
Marcy, you can make an argument. This is a very beautiful kind of relationship.
It's a mentor, okay? God.
But there is no real edge of the universe. I mean, right? I mean, there is no such thing as the edge of the universe. It's like you can't reach the end. Well, I think we do know, right? Like,
it's infinite.
Well, it keeps expanding, right. But I think that you don't reach the end. You just keep going. Yeah. I'm going to get dinged for this, but like, I don't think you loop around, but I think you kind of loop around.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is definitely listening right now. Yeah. Call in, Neil. Let us know.
Well, for sure, I know that we have mapped the universe, for sure, with instrumentation.
Not all of it.
Like, I think you like look up universe map, there actually is like a map of the universe in terms of the density of material at the different spots of the universe.
I mean, I think Alex is more right in that we have an understanding of what the universe is kind of doing, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. But I think we don't know how it works so well other than like, okay, it's expanding. There's not really an edge, but because our stupid human brains right. can't fathom the fact that there's not an edge to something... But you don't know what happens out on those outer areas. Well,
because no one's been there, you're right, that we don't know how it would
perform. Well, not only has no one been there, but I think, like, doesn't physics kind of operate a little differently there
on the far
edge? We're getting at the edge of all of our understanding. edge of the green shirt in terms of how dumb we actually are. Yeah. We are all becoming Kaczynskis in this room. Like, hey, let's just bullshit our way through acting as though we know what we're talking about.
Let's just reverse the polarity
But what, I mean, I do think it's interesting how they portray what they don't understand, which is, for me, I was like, oh, they just went into a cell. It looks molecular to me.
Even though you're right, Cam, that like, it does say that we're billions now, so that somehow they know that they're in a space and time. I still felt like it was like, it could just as easily be in a dream sequence.
I don't think they knew where they were. Yeah. And the writers were just trying to like throw a bunch of things out to say. It's a weird place.
It's a good opportunity for an FX light show, which I thought that they did a pretty good job with.
Yeah.
And by the way, a lot of FX in this show, like of all the episodes we've seen so far, this episode had a lot of like special effects breaks, not just in terms of the outer space stuff, but I mean like, we get to see somebody's hallucination of them being inside a concerto.
Right. Is that a special effect? Or
okay, that's fair. There's a lot of money spent on things they don't normally do on the episode. Mm-hmm. But thank you for being more precise. There's also a lot of effects, but there's also a lot more. Like, they had to buy new costumes and how to get more
set. Very non-ergonomic stools that we all have to sit on.
That's right. Yeah.
Just as when we thought this was going to be a pretty standard marooned episode, like all of a sudden everyone's going crazy and seeing things that, I mean, so they're all there. They're actually manifesting their thoughts. Yes. Except Picard's mom, like Riker doesn't seem to notice Picard's mom.
And isn't this weird? Because if you notice, there's not consistency. So some people can simultaneously see each other's visions. And then sometimes they cannot see. Because on the bridge, when they reveal the pets, so we have Worf's pet, the Targ, the Klingon Targ.
It looks like pink a kitty. Unicorn! No,
and don't you love the idea? Because it manifests the thoughts you're thinking, that he's seemed like this big fucking thug, and the whole time he's thinking, like, if I just had my Targ. But I want to have my Targ.
But he acts surprised, like, I haven't thought about this since a child.
Oh, they did say that,
I mean, yeah, it's like, are they conscious thoughts, or are they just
plucking things? I thought it was conscious thoughts, but you're right, he did mention that.
Well, they make that point later, but... Yeah, again, well, like, they're trying to have it both ways.
Well, apparently, Tahir are just constantly thinking about rape gangs again. Let's drop rape gang again!
I was suddenly on your side, Marcy, when they did this scene, because I was like, she needs her own spinoff show. These rape gangs are intense!
Right?
I was like, we're all of a sudden in Pennywise's sewer, and all the people are shining their flashlights.
She's saving a cat. That one set
looked really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was like, Tasha Yar, of all people, would use the term kitty cat and like know what a cat is.
Because she's soft at heart. I'm all of a sudden becoming like Marcy.
Well, here's what I think is that's a manifestation of her when she was a child, right?
Right, yeah.
And so she would call the cat Kitty. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question, Cam, before I start spouting off, because there's lots of scenes in this episode where I think right now is where I can ask this question. What do you think is going to come back from this episode and later episodes?
Well, definitely, I mean, I've talked about, like, Wesley is getting this big character arc now where he's got these special powers and destined to for some sort of greatness. I mean, I did feel like the writers are really interested in Tasha's backstory, so I imagine we're going to learn more about the rape gangs. I don't know. What else? Maybe is Picard a mama's boy? Do we learn more about that?
So I'm going to give you a clue. I'm going to see if you can get it.
Okay.
But if you can't, I'm not going to say
anything. We're all going to be disappointed forever and ever, and the show is over.
So you said you watched all the movies, right?
I did watch all the movies, yes.
There's.
I don't remember anything, though.
Okay.
Go on. A bridge falls on Kirk.
So there's something that appears in this episode that appears later in...
Is there going to be like a Targ stampede at some point?
Several episodes and also the movies. Okay.
All right. No, yeah. I'm looking forward to finding out what that is.
All of bated breath.
I am teased, Marcy, officially.
Now I want to know, too. I mean, do you...
And bitches, I love spoilers. And I am keeping it all in.
I appreciate
it.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought it was a little bit funny that, again, if we're assuming that these are things that people are thinking about, that the captain of the ship is just always imagining falling into space.
Well, that was a weird one. And then he's really calm after that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If he walks by someone dancing, he's like, get back to work.
Exactly. Or yeah, and then it's like,
how about Picard? You stop trying to fall into space.
So the other thing I want to bring up, because I feel like I bring up Worf every episode, because we don't really talk about Worf. He doesn't really have many roles.
This is the most backstory we've gotten on him so far.
Yeah, and like, he is so intense about everything.
Right.
Like, there was a previous scene where they're getting ready to test the warp engines, and I didn't really realize this until now. Like, I knew it instinctually because I watched Star Trek, but like piecing it together, he says, "Ready to proceed!" Like, you really need to be that intense about, like, everything you say?
Although,
it is the Klingon way, Marcy.
Although it was nice.
My Targ!
It was nice to see him break character a little bit besides the Targ, and that, like, you know, Captain Picard does his normal, let's hear all your commentary about what you guys think we should do. And for the first time, Worf was like, oh, well, don't let him back in the engine room. I mean, he did the thing that got us here. You shouldn't give a chance. Right. It's like, oh, great, you didn't say, we have to murder this man. Eject him out into space.
Yeah, some restraint. Well, not to hammer the Targ, but I think it does deserve some hammering.
Sure. Oh, yeah,
do you
want
to hear the scene?
Yes, I
Let's
do.
Listen to the Targ scene.
My pet. From home.
I forgot. It sounds like some 80s fantasy movie music.
They have to let us know that something weird is happening.
But when I was a child.
You're telling me it's a kitty cat?
No, not a kitty cat. It's a pig. It looks just like a pig, Tasha.
A unicorn pig.
With like a Stegosaurus pig.
I can't believe it sounds just like Legend.
Oh, it does. Like Legend, it's totally. Oh, who does the music for Legend? Not Goblin.
John Williams? No,
it's the they do all the
is it
score.
Orange Cream?
Yeah, Tangerine Dream.
Orange Cream.
Hey, it got me there, Alex.
All of a sudden, we got this traveler guy in my brain.
I know, I was like, God.
Orange sweater for Leslie. Orange
so,
cream.
So, also one of my favorite scenes. Still bringing it back to Worf. Tasha standing at her security console. And back behind her was Worf totally backing her up.
Oh, I didn't
see
that.
And I was like, they are a team, kind of. Like,
that's because they just...
Well,
they've
been pairing people. So, like, Data and Geordi are a team. Yeah. Tasha and Worf are a team.
But it was pretty cool to see, like, him as her backup.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't notice that, but that feels right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, everyone's thoughts are manifesting. Picard's on his way to the engine room, and he gets down there, and he makes an announcement telling everyone to be careful what they think, because their thoughts are manifesting. He comes at this conclusion pretty quickly, and he's certain about it.
He pulls a fire alarm. He says, red alert, guys. Don't think your thoughts. I know you guys are all freak shows on this show. I know we have families on here. Who knows what the hell people are doing behind closed doors. Please stop thinking.
Is this the time when he's like, finds a guy like, burning, and he's like,
I think that was a little bit later.
That's later.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's a ballerina he notices.
Yeah,
he people running
the ballerina,
from the
and
monster.
Then he sees his maman. That's when, like, Riker breaks him out and they go to the engine room.
Didn't remember that he had a strong relationship with his mother, is one of his things.
Perfect. Picard. Picard's Patrick Stewart moment where he almost, he's like tearing up.
Yeah, it was a sweet moment.
And he's like, okay, let's get back to business. But it was like obvious that he had a moment there.
Maybe that's why they put it in as like, he's been too kind of emotionally inaccessible. This would be a good moment to realize like, oh yeah, I mean, he's doing this as captain. Maybe he actually has a backstory that matters.
So guys, I'm coming to you asking you for help in understanding what is happening in this episode, because now is the time where we learn that Kaczynski hasn't been doing anything. It's been the assistant the whole time. And Kaczynski says something like, I honestly thought I was doing it the whole time. I thought he was rubbing off on me or something.
Yeah, something like I thought
what
I was
is his relationship
level.
With the traveler? Why does he think he is his gobbledygook means anything? Help me understand what happened here.
Well, okay, this is great too, because again, with Starfleet, so
he
there's
just grew up and the guy didn't want
there's
him
no
anymore.
Quality control on Starfleet.
Exactly.
Yes,
what I'm saying.
Is that if he's like, guys, I know my entire Starfleet career, I've been a C student.
Like, he is someone's son, or like, I bet he married someone's daughter, and like, some admiral's like, okay, give this guy a shot, just let him enter his code. And
nobody thought to ask a question, well, all of a sudden, one day, he is a super genius when it comes to
an alien
drives.
Species who apparently no one knows.
And no one seems to care what his name is. It's unpronounceable. Someone heard it was Tim, but they don't know. The traveler is hurt. The traveler is injured. I had a question for you,
Kit.
So here,
let me suppose as to what it could
throw
be.
Throw this out.
Because, you know, I'm just making assumptions.
You
it's
have to.
Probably not written anywhere in the Star Trek Bible. But, like, this guy can change time and space with thought. So who's to say he can't change...
Kaczynski isn't made up, a figment?
He can't give himself credentials other people believe.
Well, and also just change Kaczynski's mind or...
True.
Or maybe. Do any kind of thing to manipulate
but
the situation.
But he keeps saying over and over again, I would never do anything to hurt
maybe
you.
Maybe he doesn't think that that's hurting someone.
Yeah, that's okay. True.
But Kaczynski, like, seems to know, like, he implies that he knows the Traveler has powers and he thought he had learned some of the
Kaczynski
powers.
Yeah, Kaczynski seems to have some
but the Traveler
insight.
Kind of also implies, like, I'm completely, like, stoic. Away, I'm not letting anyone know about me.
Right.
So it's confusing.
It's very bizarre to me, even if we're all on the same page that this is a little bit weird, even if it can be explained. But they know that the Traveler, who now we now know has supernatural abilities, he can manifest thought into reality, or he can allow people to manifest thought into reality. They know he's incredibly sick. Why wouldn't they interrogate Kaczynski instead of risk killing him? Because it's like, well, if we wake him up, then he might die. And it's like, you know, Kaczynski is just standing, shivering in the corner, and you could ask him, what's the deal with this guy
and
you've been
might
hanging
not know,
out with?
But they don't ask.
They don't ask him a word.
Yeah.
They're just like, wake him up again.
But okay, so I don't understand how Kaczynski thought he was doing anything. I also don't understand what happened. What was the mistake? He said he made a mistake. How did they get out here? Did he get sick and that was the mistake?
No, there's
or did the mistake make him
sick? There's a
scene
early on. I think he gets distracted by Wesley.
But he knew Wesley was there.
It's not his fault. Wesley's very enchanting in these early episodes. Even I get it.
Okay, because there's this scene where he's like
it's
on the concert.
Tight tonic with a boy. And he's just precocious.
Just shut up. Okay. He's on the console, and he's doing just fine, and then, like, Wesley's, like, standing behind him, and he turns and looks, and then something happens, and he freaks out.
Yeah.
Because I think he was, like, distracted, because Wesley's, like, this prodigy who he wasn't expecting to be there.
I thought he said he was looking for Wesley.
He was looking for people like
him.
Yeah. And so he didn't realize that Wesley was...
Wait, can't he change matter with thought? Maybe just...
Fix the whole issue.
Well,
but yes,
he
seems to be
a
battery.
Right. Yeah. Well, and he gets sick. And again, like, it doesn't explain why he got sick.
Because he used too much accidental power.
As they were, like, later saying...
I also feel like that happened because he was sick.
Yeah. You're right that it's completely, like, it's
ambiguous.
They fudge it like crazy for whatever is demanded by the plot. But if you were going to try and give it a defense, it seems to be that the people on the ship have to not just think their thoughts, but they have to actually try and power him
as well. And he says that's how they got to the end of the universe. The second time was because people were thinking about it. He said thought brought us here.
Right, yeah.
Implying that, like, someone on the ship was like, boy, I want to go to the edge of the universe.
It's like, we're already this far. Yeah.
Or maybe the whole ship is about exploration.
It does seem to be just
maybe everybody's thoughts are focused on,
like,
we got this far. Let's
and
go
Picard
further.
Does yeah. say at a certain point is that it would be a chaos. So maybe they just threw him off yeah. because all their thoughts create a chaotic jumble that he couldn't process all at once. And the ship just was like, well, this is the last place I remember being was with all my little light buddies.
Well, then they need the Traveler to come back and get them back home.
Yeah.
But he's sick and he needs help. And so Picard gets on the con and he's like, everybody, I need you to think about the Traveler, care about it. Most people haven't even seen the Traveler.
Don't
they
know
don't
it looks
have
like...
any image. It would be like if Ghostbusters 2, instead of the whole cool scene with the Statue of Liberty to get everyone to like be positive, sure. they would just drove around in an ice cream truck saying, think happy thoughts, everyone.
Yeah,
please
imagine
think happy thoughts.
A weirdo face.
Couldn't
and
the
think
writers
about
have
it?
Come
like
up with something
Peter
for Picard?
Pan, so let's everybody clap. For
yeah, it's just like a really weak, like they're trying to give Picard a moment too where he's inspiring the crew. And it's like, No, you could come up with something yeah. better than this.
And there's like a full 10-second stop on the unisex dress.
Yeah, that made
oh,
it come
yeah,
back.
I saw
him.
Skirt man again.
I saw him.
Like,
it's
they...
not a skirt, Alex. Yeah, it's really cool to see the
well, that was kind of interesting, too. We see a lot of extras in this episode.
Yeah,
a lot
we
of
do.
Random crew. Like, most of the...
This is a big extra
most
show.
Of the thoughts that we see materialized are extras. People
yeah.
have never seen. We don't... It's just interesting. We don't see Crusher's thoughts, Wesley's thoughts. Troy's, any ones. We see
yeah.
Picard, Tasha, and Worf, and that's it.
Yeah,
the main characters.
I had read that, and remind me again what the name of the director was.
Rob Bowman.
That he was trying really hard with this episode to prove he had the stuff. So I guess they like he like was like, we're going to pull out all the stuff.
Make
we're going to do
I mean,
all
kinda
kinds
like it,
of things we haven't done before.
Bigger.
So he made the ship. Because, yeah, this is the first episode that I understand that they actually like added corridors that changed the entire configuration of how people blueprint the ship and like
oh,
what's
really?
Located with which because he added parts to the set or he asked to add
I mean,
parts
think,
to the
I think
set.
That stuff worked it was just...
yeah and the show did actually feel really grand
yeah.
say what you will against this episode but this episode felt like oh they have a real budget this is like a real like space opera going on but I did want to quickly say before we go too far that and I finally remember the guy's name it's Eric Minyuk but
is
the Traveler okay. but his little soliloquy that he gives even if it's like you know, it's very utilitarian. I was like, oh, this guy's compelling. Like, I can see why he would be someone that fans would remember. And I guess, actually, he was going to be Data originally and that he lost the job to Brent Spiner. I could totally see him as
sure,
Data.
Sure.
Yeah,
yeah. He made this episode. I mean, I feel like
he gives it the gravitas.
I think that maybe part of why nobody really questions why he's there is that... He kind of comes off as this person's like, don't pay attention to me.
Yeah. I've come for love.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah. And maybe that's part of his thing is that they go through these societies kind of laying low and nobody really questions them and they have these kind of special powers. And so he feels special.
Yeah.
And he turns out to be special.
I do like they keep giving him those kind of tropey lines like, how would you say... how would I put this that you would understand? He's like he says
words.
That a lot. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like how he calls humans uninteresting until recently.
Oh, right. That's the big thing as to like why we haven't heard about them. Because you actually, your point earlier could have explained it. Just like, oh, we've been around for a long time. We just erase ourselves from your memory. But in this case, he's like, nope, this is the first time, guys, because you guys have been dumb shit up until this point.
Which means pretty much everybody else in the Federation is boring, right?
Yeah, the Vulcans, the Klingons, Romulans.
Yeah, we don't know what may have been. Because, I mean, even though he's looking for these special people, there may have been like some big moment in the history of like humanity where all of a sudden we sort of came on the radar for people
right.
who are looking.
Yeah. Alex, you say you like to watch extras, but I like watching like the bit part characters, like the people with one or two lines.
Okay.
Like that fire guy kind of, he had to play a couple big emotions and only has like two lines.
He
didn't do very well. And I always wonder like, is this like this guy's biggest role ever? Is this his claim to fame that he always talks about at Thanksgiving dinner? Like, well, when I was on Enterprise, I was a...
Are you a fan of Star Trek, ladies and gentlemen? Not one from 30 years ago.
But they're trying so hard, those actors,
yeah.
with the one line. I'm going to make this. I'm going to become a recurring character.
Yeah. He didn't have any talent, but he gave it his all.
He did. I am scared. I'm relieved.
Yeah, I'm perspiring. That's all me. That's no special effect.
The orchestra scene was kind of funny because the guy's like... playing the violin or whatever. And then when it disappears, he just like goes and goes back to eating.
Yeah, I know.
Did
like,
you
no
notice?
Big deal.
Like
it
like,
didn't
whatever.
Shatter his world. That he wasn't immediately running to Beverly Crusher being like, I just saw the craziest.
He's just like, well, we're on the Enterprise.
He is another captain in making right there.
Yeah. Well, I guess some of the things that they cut or were supposed to be in the original was that Picard and Crusher were going to see Wesley's dad.
Oh. That would have been super cool. That bums me out that wasn't
in
there.
Isn't that kind of... Yeah. Upsetting that. I mean, that would have been
because it would have been a moment for both of them because they were best friends, Picard, and obviously it's his interact ex husband. But also, they have a new triangle because there's a burgeoning romance.
Didn't get in the final cut
when we start learning that Wesley becomes kind of pretty forefront in the episode, and that we're learning things about him. Someone says Wesley, and Picard's like, "The boy?
Yeah.
What other Wesley are they talking about, Picard? Come on." But so what did you guys think about the whole Wesley reveal?
The pivot for the last 5 minutes of an episode, that's a big pivot. Mm-hmm. Like, in my mind, like, you just revealed that this guy isn't just... We already know he's a genius. We already know that he's incredibly smart.
Yeah.
But now he's, like, the Chosen. We have a Highlander on this Enterprise. I was like, that's a big deal. I didn't remember him being that big. And I also thought, like, wow, you really crammed that information in there at the very last.
Marcy?
I mean,
you definitely know where it goes.
Yeah, I do. I read some of the reviews where they're like, he's like the Chosen One. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting where the show takes that arc. Mm. I'm excited for both of you to re-watch it, because obviously you don't really remember a lot about it, because you didn't even remember that he was a prodigy.
Nope.
So I think it's interesting. I think you'll see moments where Wesley has his ups and downs, and Picard... I think it's interesting that he's like, oh, you're a genius? Okay, I guess I'll let you be on the bridge now. You know, like,
I mean, he definitely took the traveler's word for gospel.
All right.
I mean, I liked it a lot. I grew up in the 80s and 90s. I loved the young boy, you know, becoming the chosen one trope. I grew up with that. I love it. I love Harry Potter. So I'm okay with that. Obviously, I don't know where this goes. You do, Marcy. So don't try not to give anything away. But... I'm pretty sure Wesley wasn't in the movies, so I'm pretty sure the writers write him out. And I don't think he died, because I think I would have heard if they killed him off. So I'm guessing he goes to Starfleet, maybe he goes to live with the Traveler and do
Say he gets promoted to ensign at the end of the episode. Yeah. So that's his big, like...
That's his big victory.
Big reveal or big celebration.
He gets to sit there on, like, the little pillow cushion.
Yeah.
Anyway, my question is this, which is... Since Next Generation, we've had a few different shows, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, then we've gone into two prequel shows and rebooted some prequels, but it seems like there is a lot of opportunity to do a sequel to The Next Generation. You got Wesley, who's apparently bound to become like the greatest Captain Starfleet has ever seen, and the actor is still acting, much to Alex's chagrin. Much of the cast of Next Generation is still acting. Some are at their peak performance, like Stewart. And I'm sure they'd come on to do a pilot, at least. I wonder why they haven't done a sequel to this.
I'm really frustrated with shows nowadays. They really like those prequels. And I'm really tired of the prequels.
Well, like Enterprise, I thought was a cool idea. Let's go back in time. But now this Discovery is a prequel, too? Yeah, let's after Next Generation?
Go ahead, sorry.
I don't know.
I thought the misstep with Enterprise was that they went too far back, and that a lot of this cool stuff that we expect from Star Trek, they're like, we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. All right. So, any final thoughts on where no one has gone before?
Well, how about you first, Cam? What did you think about this one? So you've mentioned before that you thought that it wasn't as much fun as last time, but did you find parts of it that you really thought?
No. I mean, it had a lot of the wonder. I guess I see what you're saying, Marcy. It has that kind of slower pace and like. The unraveling mystery is pretty good. So I guess hearing your thoughts made me appreciate it a little bit more. I guess I just missed it. It didn't feel as fun as some of the other ones. Even the shitty ones were kind of fun, and this one was just
they had humorous moments. Yeah, Riker didn't even glint until the very end.
It's true.
And within the glint, can it be a Next Generation episode?
I wrote down, he went from glint to glare.
Oh.
This whole episode, he was glaring
it took
at
this
everything.
Whole time to say
well,
that,
I mean, leave it to a fucking Polish engineer to destroy Riker's charisma.
And what I like about the commanding crew is that they're very good at recognizing when they've made mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They own up to them, and then everybody acknowledges it, and they move on. Like, Riker's like, yeah, Wesley did tell me, and I didn't listen to him. And they're like, okay, well, I wouldn't have either, but cool, you know?
Yeah.
And they're humble about their mistakes, and that's, like, what good leadership is, where... It's okay for people to make mistakes and have failures. It's just how you respond to those mistakes and failures that's important.
One final thought is that I just it's dumb, but I forgot to mention it earlier. The Kilt Man, totally like an older, ugly John Cho, right?
He looked a lot like John Cho.
And, like, yeah. For a second, I was like, John Cho's dad?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, I also, the ballerina looked like Lark Voorhees to me from Saved by the Bell a little bit.
Oh.
It wasn't her. I just thought it was Lisa? Like, oh, is that Lark Voorhees? Yeah, Lisa Turtle.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. It's like, you've got some people with skills on your ship. Like, yeah. Everywhere you go,
they're kind of
like,
ruining their lives. Yeah, not doing that.
I could have been a like prima ballerina, but I decided to go into Starfleet.
I love pressing a blank touchscreen.
All right.
Well, Cameron, the next episode is Lonely Among Us.
Lonely Among Us.
What do you think that's going to be about?
Give me a hint.
Who do you think is going to be the loneliest of
the loneliest?
Them all,
oh, let's
of
see.
The crew.
Mm-hmm. I've already determined that Worf.
Worf.
<is a banana. laughs> Worf and Tasha are an item. We know the Riker and Troy get together. Crusher and Picard. Data is obviously just going around being fully functional for everyone, I'm guessing. So it must be O'Brien. he returns. Okay. I've been waiting for him to come back.
Okay.
He shows up and he is so lonely. And then he finds Whoopi Goldberg because I don't know when she shows up. She shows up sometime. So I bet that's it. This is the introduction of Whoopi Goldberg and O'Brien officially.
Oh, right. You're definitely on that like slash fiction.
I've got my future career in my sights.
You're like pairing people up already.
Yeah, I mean, at least it's age appropriate.
Oh, one last one in there from the 3-point line.
All right, well, good night, everybody.
So long.